So, bad news is, my wife's told me I'm not allowed to do the podcast naked anymore. So, there's no full frontal nudity in the podcast anymore. I am sorry about that. I know most of you, all out of the four of you, tune in just for the full frontal nudity. I don't know what to say. I've been censored. I've been censored.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people. How are you? It's great to see you. I've got some mistletoe. I shouldn't have said how are you, because I'll do that in a second. I've got some mistletoe here, right? I'm holding it, right? And I'll give you a big kiss. How's that? It's nice to see you. Thanks for coming. Here comes the interactive bit. I know it's your favourite bit. Here it comes. You ready? How are you? Oh, really? And what did the doctor say? Oh. And have they given you some cream or something? Yeah, I know I had that one time, yeah. No, they gave me some cream and some pills and it cleared up in no time. Yeah, you'll be fine. Okay, cool. And scene. How was that? Did that work out for you? Good. So, I've got a packed show. Now, I've been contacted by a few people, but I've forgotten about it. So, if you contacted me and I said I'd mention it in the show and I don't mention anything about it in the show, then you'll have to contact me again and you're welcome to say, "Oi, you told me you'd mention it in the show and you didn't. What kind of tin pot operation are you running there?" And I'll say, "Well, you know, you've heard the show. You know what kind of tin pot operation it is. It's this. It's a shambles. And for that, I apologise." Let's get started with this.
Jingle, jingle, jingle for a segment.
So, we're doing the top 10 lists. Now, I can't lie to you, I've been not inundated, but I've got quite a lot. And I think, is it 20? I might have something like that. And I've already done 7. So, here's the deal. It was becoming really difficult for me to figure out. I've got so many lists. I'm looking. I'm thinking, is that one better than that? I don't know. So, what I've had to do is create a formula that I use to work out what are the best top 10 lists. Does that make sense to you? So, certain people aren't going to like this. I've had to apply that formula to all the ones I've already looked at. And the countdown of who has the top 10 list has changed slightly. And you'll be thinking, hang on, Jack. No, you won't be thinking that. You'll be thinking, hang on, Jack. You said it's your opinion and you're going to choose what the best list is. Well, I am still, but I'm using my formula. So it's still my opinion. The formula is created using my opinion. I had a team of scientists working on this. Maths wizards all sitting around with calculators and pencils and rubbers, probably, I don't know, maybe a ruler between them. One of them had a set of compasses. I don't know what he had that for. Anyway, they sat round, worked out this fantastic formula for me. Now I put all the 10 lists of films in and it works out. And it is pretty much, all I'm trying to say is, don't get annoyed if you were, Benji, I'm talking to you. Don't be annoyed that you're not number 2 anymore and Scott has moved up. That's not my fault. This is the formula's fault, not my fault. Okay, right. This week's first countdown we're counting down is Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House. Now, the Advent Calendar House podcast, I listen to it quite a lot, actually. It's very good. Talks about Christmas specials and films and that sort of stuff. I've never actually been on the podcast. And apparently the reason is because I'm incredibly unprofessional and also my personal hygiene is very poor. But anyway, here we go. This is Mike Westphal's top 10 Christmas films. Play the music. At number 10, this is the first time on the charts, I think, although I could be wrong, I've not been paying attention. It's Love Actually. At number 9, we have Die Hard. Number 8 is Scrooged with Bill Murray. Number 7 is Miracle on 34th Street. He hasn't put what year, I'm guessing it's 1957. Number 6 is A Christmas Story. Number 5, It's a Wonderful Life. Number 4, Home Alone. Number 3, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Number 2 is Elf. And number 1 is A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Very good list there, Mike. I've got to say, very good indeed. Yeah. Okay, Next up, we have Anthony Caruso from Tis the Podcast, and I think I recommended that last year sometime. It's a great podcast that looks at lots of different Christmas films, and this is one of the few Christmas podcasts that is actually weekly. I've never been on it, and again, I believe that is because I'm unprofessional and uncouth. This is Anthony Caruso's Top 10. Here we go. At number 10, it is Anna and the Apocalypse. At number 9 is Krampus. Number 8 is Miracle on 34th Street. Number 7 is Home Alone 2. Number 6 is The Grinch with Jim Carrey. Number 5, it's A Christmas Story. Number 4 is Home Alone. Number 3, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Number 2 is Elf. And at number 1, it is The Santa Claus. So that's Anthony's top 10, and there is a couple on there. It's the first appearances. We've not had Krampus before, and we've not had Anna and the Apocalypse, both two sort of more in the horror genre of Christmas films. So we've got 9 on the charts now. Let's have a countdown of the top 9 top 10 Christmas movie lists. Again, I've got to reiterate, this is going to be slightly different from last week because I've been using my formula to calculate which are the best lists. Okay, so here we go. Starting with number 9. At number 9, it is still Robert Nicholas. New in at number 8, we have Anthony Caruso. At number 7, it's Katie Gibson. Number 6, the show's number 1 fan, Lee Mayer. At number 5, it's our American Scandinavian correspondent, Benji Pearson. Number 4, Art Kilmer. Number 3 is our American correspondent, Scott Newman. Number 2, new in at number 2, is Mike Westphal. And still, at number 1, it is Crick Jiminy. That is how the list stands, the top 9, top 10 Christmas lists. I've got loads more I've got to get through. Next week I might do 3. I'm worried I'm not going to get them all done before Christmas. But that's how it stands. If you want to still get involved, you can. Send me your list and I will read it out. But that's how it stands at the moment. Let's get on with this.
Yule logs, you'll love them, I'll love them, we'll love them, we all love the Yule logs, the Yule logs, the Yule logs, that Yule log, yeah!
This episode's version of the Yule log is Nick Offerman, who you probably know from Parks and Recreation. He played Ron Swanson. He is sitting by a Yule log fire drinking whiskey. Now, this was part of a series called My Tales of Whiskey, which I think were like an advertising campaign on YouTube, in which Nick Offerman was advertising, I'm going to say this wrong, Lagavulin whiskey, single malt whiskey. Lagavulin single malt whiskey. I hope I said that right, but I don't really care. So it's literally him sitting in a, there's no loop on this one. You know, a lot of the versions, it's like a 15 minute clip or 20 second clip where they loop it continually for hours and hours. This one is a proper 45 minutes of him sitting there. He's not looking at the fire. He's sitting next to the fire with a bottle of whiskey next to him, and he's got his glass of whiskey and he's taking occasional sips of it. So it's pretty boring, of course, but there's some highlights. A couple of times he'll lift it up, look at the glass, take a sip. Another time he might not even look at the glass and just take a sip. Another time he scratches himself. At one point he crosses his legs. That was very exciting. About 20 odd minutes in, he's finished his glass. So what does he do? Well, of course he tops it up, doesn't he? That's what you'd do. That's what I'd do. Bit more whiskey, sits there for another 25 minutes drinking whiskey with occasional sips. I don't think he tops up again. When he finishes his glass the second time, that's it. He's done. He gets up, walks off camera. That is the end of the Yule log. I can't recommend it, really, because very little happens. And it's like you're watching a person, you're not watching a Yule log. And that's the deal with this section, isn't it? You're meant to be watching a Yule log. But, you know, if you're a massive fan of Nick Offerman, and he is very good. I've watched some of his stand-up. I think he's brilliant. I liked him in Parks and Recreation, of course, because he was fantastic. But this wasn't my bag, really. But it might be yours. Anyway, if you want to watch it, it's 45 minutes long. Just type in Nick Offerman Yule Log. You'll have no trouble finding it. And that's this episode's version of the Yule Log. Let's all look forward to next episode's version. Now it's time for this. So about a week ago, I received the top 10 movie lists from our most valued listener, Eddie Honan. And I will be reading out his list in an upcoming episode, but spoiler alert, his number one film is It's a Wonderful Life. And he put a lovely story at the bottom of his email that I want to share with you now. So here we go. He's put, I realise this is probably no one else's top 10, but it's the ones I watch year round and they're all so dear to me. A fun note, each Christmas Eve I clandestinely leave a copy of Tom Sawyer at a friend's door with the inscription, Dear, and their name, remember, no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings, Edward. Obviously he's changed the name there from Clarence to Edward. If you're a fan of It's a Wonderful Life, you'll definitely get the reference there. And then he's put, I always give it to someone I feel could use that message. And a lovely story about the second time. My friend Alex was working till about 11 p.m. on Christmas Eve. He was walking up to his apartment at just about midnight and it just began snowing. He saw this small package wrapped in plain brown paper and thought it was another bad thing to happen that day. He opened it and wept. So there you go. Isn't that just delightful? Now, I'm fortunate enough to say that Eddie is going to be doing an interview with me in the next episode where he's going to be talking about the fact that he's playing Fezziwig in A Christmas Carol, the musical. And he's mentioned here that the chap he left that book for, his friend Alex, he plays Marley each year in their production. So thank you for that story, Eddie. I thought you listeners would enjoy hearing it. Let's move on and do this. This episode's Santa Claus Is Not Coming to Town was sent in by Paul Hudderbine. Now, clearly, Paul Hudderbine doesn't want one of my blooming Christmas pickle ornaments, which no one seems to blooming want. But anyway, he's emailed it through, and listen to this, he's put, figured I'd share my story. If you do use it, you'll need to fix it up a little. I'm not a storyteller. Well, I can tell you, Paul Hudderbine, that I am a storyteller, but I'm not going to fix it up because I can't be bothered. Okay, so I'm just going to, you know, read it out as you sent it. Because that's the way I roll, man. And if you don't like it, well then, why don't you like it? Why don't you like it? Why don't you love me? Right, okay, this is how it goes. This is interesting, though. What is really cool is he can pinpoint the exact day that he found out, right? And it was 33 years ago. Over 33, nearly 34 years ago. And, oh, actually, we can work out his age if we want. So here we go. With a quick Google search, he's sent this in from the States, so I'm going to put on my best American accent. With a quick Google search, I can tell you it was February the 5th, 1988. Sorry, just being silly, wasn't I? I can't do an American accent. I don't think I can. I like to think I can do a bit of a Southern one, but I'm not going to risk it, because anyone in the States listening will be like, what a dinkle. What is this? This is nothing like. This is like when an American tries to do an Australian accent. Anyway, here we go. With a quick Google search, I can tell you it was February the 5th, 1988. So I was 9 and my brother was 7. I was a huge, passionate WWF fan. Hulk Hogan was my hero. On February the 5th, 1988. Actually, I've just remembered, I read this a couple of days ago, and this, I really did find this funny, actually. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Should have said that at the start. Didn't. What kind of podcast is this where I interrupt myself? I'm going to start again. Here we go. I was a huge, passionate WWF fan. Hulk Hogan was my hero. On February the 5th, 1988, there was a match between Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan. He lost his belt that night. I can't remember how it all unfolded, but there was some cheating involved. Believing that wrestling was real, I was just in hysterics and couldn't come to terms with his loss. I remember flailing around on the kitchen floor, throwing a tantrum and trying to explain to my mother what had just happened. She's really not the consoling type. I don't exactly remember how she broke it to me, but she'd clearly had enough of me and blurted out that wrestling is fake and so is Santa Claus. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Oh, honey, your favourite wrestler has lost his belt. I'm so sorry to hear that. And just so you know, there's no Santa. And also, you're adopted. And we've never loved you. The last bits I just added to make it funny. I'm guessing that's not the case. But imagine that. That's not just not consoling someone. That's like, oh, I've had enough of this. Right, you deserve this. And he's put, she's not really the consoling type. Yeah, no kidding, Paul Hudderbine. No kidding. That's not just not the consoling type. That's almost like the vindictive, heartless type. Really? Anyway, sorry, I don't want to disparage your mother. I'm sure she's a wonderful lady. And then he's put at the end, I can't remember if I was upset or not. What do you mean you can't remember if you're upset or not? You're already flailing around on the floor crying, and then you get that broken to you. Imagine that. He's going, oh, good Lord, love me. Oh, good Lord. But, Mum, but, honey, honey, wrestling's fake, and there's no Santa. What? Oh, I feel better now. I can't remember if I was upset or not. Anyway, here we go. But let's just say it all made sense now. That's why everyone else has a Nintendo and we don't. That's good, isn't it? That's good. That's it. Oh, now I get it. And then he's put, also, a side note, the next Christmas is probably when my new tradition started, which was snooping around for gifts, and I'd even go through her purse looking for receipts. Isn't that brilliant? It's like, right, yeah, you've dismantled all my fantasies, you've ruined all my dreams, so I'm going to turn to a life of crime, creeping around the house looking for presents and receipts. Oh, she bought me that, did she? Nice. So there you go, that's Paul's story, which I really liked, actually. An awful way to find out, but, you know, kick a man while he's down. And hang on a minute, are you saying that wrestling's fake? Really? Now it's time for this. So, boys and girls, I've received another email from my curious Christmas customs correspondent. That's Frank the Tank. And he said in his email, it says, Dear Jack, I've found another obscure tradition that I'm too lazy to research, so I figured you could do it. And I can sit back with my feet up and listen to it. Those aren't his exact words, but I think that's what he's going for, really, because he's just making more work for me. But I'm glad he is, because he's sent in another thing. I'd never heard a word about this. I listen to loads of Christmas podcasts, never heard a whisper about this one. So well done for finding it, Frank. And this is Bonfires on the Levee in Louisiana. So along the Mississippi River, you've got the levees, and on those levees, people build these huge, tall bonfires that are up to like 20 foot tall sort of thing, and they're like a ladder framework. They're normally sort of six-sided affairs, and you get this ladder framework, so they're really tall, and on Christmas Eve, they all set light to them at about 7 p.m, and all along the river, you've got these bonfires. Now, the place where they're at their sort of densest, you'll find the most of them, is St. James Parish, which is like a county, and in that county you've got the towns of Gramercy, Lucha and Paulina. I hope I said those right. And they're about 30 or 40 miles from New Orleans. And at some spots, like, you'll see these bonfires that are like just like 100 yards apart. That's how close they are. They've got so many of them. And in recent years, people have been building all sorts of different structures. So like, you might get like a fire engine or like a steamboat that they've built into be a bonfire to just set light to on Christmas Eve. One year, apparently, there was a antebellum mansion built, and it even had an outhouse, and people could go inside it and climb up the staircase. The tradition dates back to apparently the 1800s. Now, there's records of it from like the late 1800s, but it could have been going on even before that. And they believe it comes from the French and German settlers, but not the Cajun ones. A few people say it's like a Cajun tradition, but from my research, most places state that it came after the Cajun settlers. So although it's not something I was ever familiar with, big bonfires have been part of the Christmas ritual throughout Europe for hundreds of years, and it's believed that it was taken over from Europe with the French settlers in the 1800s, and that's where the custom originated from. Now, there's sort of three theories about why they build these bonfires, where the tradition originated. Now, the first one is that it's lighting the pathway for Papa Noel to find his way to the children's houses. And Papa Noel is like a Cajun version of Santa Claus, and he doesn't ride in a sleigh. Actually, I'll tell you a bit about him at the end. I'll come back to that. That's one thing. So the family would put like a bonfire on the levee by their house so that Papa Noel would find the houses. He could go, oh yeah, there's a house there, let's go in, give him some presents. That's one theory. Another theory is that it was to light the way for people to get to the nearest Catholic church, and you'd go down the river to your church on Christmas Eve. And the third theory I found was that it was so that people visiting their neighbours and friends would be able to find the houses. So, you know, you're going down this dark river at night and then you see a bonfire and you know that's where your mate lives. And you go in, you see him, you get hammered, you get back in your boat, you flail around, you fall out, you get soaking wet. It's the middle of winter, you're freezing cold, you drag yourself back into the boat, you manage to get home and you're like, why did I bother? I could have just stayed at home. I got hammered at home. I'm good at getting hammered. That's one thing I am good at. I'm guessing that's what happened. You know, I could be wrong, but that's, to me, that sounds like a pretty good Christmas Eve. Yeah, so that's the tradition. Now, if you want to go and see it, it's pretty easy. Like I said, 7 o'clock on Christmas Eve, these bonfires cover like dozens of miles along the river, so you're not going to miss them. And there's like coach tours you can go on, like a 4-hour coach tour, so you can drive along in the coach and they'll sort of give you a tour as you're going along. And there's also a river tour you can do as well that goes out at sort of around 7 o'clock, I guess, when they're lighting the bonfires. You get to see them all the way up and down the river. And because it starts at 7, do you know what I mean? So you go out, have a look at these bonfires, that's great, and then you've still got plenty of time to go and get hammered, which is what Christmas Eve is for, as you all know. And apparently it's only ever been cancelled in recent years on two occasions. One was in 1982 because of really bad weather, and I don't know what bad weather it was. Maybe it's tornado or some strong winds or really heavy rain, I don't know, because I'm guessing down in the deep south you wouldn't have snow, would you? I don't know. And sadly it was also cancelled in 2020 because of COVID. I'm guessing some people still had their bonfires, but not to the extent that it had been in previous years. So when I was doing my research about it, it's really interesting, you know, looking at all these bonfires, like these really tall, like I said, they're really tall, you know, up on the levees there. It must be quite a sight to behold when they're all there and you're sort of passing past them all. There was one team of guys, they called themselves Blood, Sweat and Bonfires, and each year they build like a massive, I don't know, would you call it a sculpture? What would you call it? Structure? It's a structure, but it's a design. So one year they did like a great big guitar. Another year they did like a snapping turtle. Another year they did like a big mouth bass. And last year they did a great big alligator. And not only that, these structures they make are moving as well. So you can go online, go on YouTube, and you'll see this snapping turtle, like it opens its mouth and closes its mouth and sort of moves its head in and out. And same with the alligator, he'd open and close his jaws. I don't know what the trout did. I should have had another look at that. Was it a trout? What did I say it was? A bass? It's a big fish with a big wide mouth anyway. Is that a bass? I'm not a fisherman, I'm a gardener. I tell you what, if they'd like done a sculpture of a shrub, I would have been able to tell them what it was. Possibly. Don't know everything. I mean, you know, I know some plants. I know like I know trees. I know what trees look like, and I know what grass looks like. So if they'd done some grass, wouldn't that? I could have said that. If they'd done a tree, I could have said yes, a tree. Bushes. I know what bushes look like. They're sort of green and bushy. I'm not a very good gardener. And these guys, they spend like weeks planning and then like weeks building these huge structures, and they really are a fantastic sight to behold, and it's all done for a good cause as well. So if you want to have a bonfire and you live near the levee, there are some restrictions. So first thing, the fires must be at least 125 feet apart. Two, fires can be no higher than 25 feet, and this came into effect in 1987. For a few years it was 28 feet, but before that there was no restrictions. Number three, fires can be no larger than the crown of the levee, which is 12 feet in diameter. And number four, you're not allowed to put tires, creosote or foreign matter in your bonfire because of environmental concerns. And five, each town is allowed one tourist attraction with no regulations. So that can be as big as you want, as wide as you want. Chuck as many tires on it as you want, I'm guessing. I don't know. What was the other thing? And you can have it as close to all the other fires as you want, I guess, as well. Yeah, probably. I don't know what the deal is. So there you go. That's the tradition of bonfires on the levee. If you live near the area, definitely worth a look. If you don't live near the area, have you considered moving house so that you can see this? No? Probably not. So earlier on, as I was saying, one of the reasons they say that these bonfires were built is to light the way for Papa Noel to find his way to the children's houses. Now, Papa Noel, he doesn't ride in a sleigh. He rides in a pirogue, which is like a type of boat, and instead of it being pulled by eight reindeer, and Rudolph, 9 reindeer. It's pulled by 9 crocodiles. And I looked up their names, and it's a bit of a shame because there's no... It's not like you've got Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, and all those ones where we all know the names. There's a few different books that have got different names for the alligators. So I'm going to list the ones in a book called The Legend of Papa Noel, A Cajun Christmas Story by Terry Hoover Durham. And the names of the alligators are Etienne and Emile, Remy and René, Alcy and Alphonse, Francois and Fabienne, and Nicolette. Unlike all the other crocodiles, Nicolette is bright white and she leads the way. And in this book, if you want to get a copy, it's on Amazon, or you can go on YouTube, and I saw a couple of different readings of the book. Now, Papa Noel lives in a swamp in Louisiana, and he goes out on Christmas Eve delivering presents to all the good boys and girls. And this story, The Legend of Papa Noel by Terry Hoover Durham, it tells how on Christmas Eve it's pitch black and they're trying to make their way through the swamp, and all the alligators are sort of banging into the trees and getting cut up and grazed and that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden they see all these bright bonfires and it guides their way, and they can see exactly where they're going as they make their way through the swamp. So, if you want to check it out, it's on YouTube. You'll find some readings of it. It's a lovely book. Give it a look. But that's something else I'd never heard of. Now, I knew that the French name for Father Christmas was Père Noël, which pretty much means Father Christmas. But I had never heard of Papa Noël. So, that's something else we've all learned today, kids. So, you've got the bonfires on the levee, and you've got Papa Noël. So, you know, it's a twofer, isn't it? So, a massive thanks again to my curious Christmas correspondent. No, have I missed something? Curious Christmas Customs correspondent, Frank the Tank. Thanks, Frank. You're doing a great job. So now it's time for our second story sent in by Rich Chambers. He's a singer-songwriter who wrote this. I told you this last week, actually. Were you listening last week? You weren't? Well, go and listen to the last episode. It was number 39. Go and listen to it. I'm going to wait here while you go and listen to it. It was about 45 minutes long, so I'm going to wait for about 45 minutes. Okay? I'm waiting here. I'm still waiting. Do you know what? I can't wait any longer. I've waited far too long. You could have just paused this one while you listen to that one anyway. Why don't you do that instead of making me wait? So that's a bit rude, to be honest. Right, now I've forgotten what I was doing. What was I doing? Oh, yeah, right. So this is the second story sent in from Rich Chambers. And I don't know if you remember, but the deal is he sends in one of his Christmas memories. I play that, and then I play a clip from one of his songs on the album Santa's Rocking Band, which you really should check out. I'll talk more about that after his story. Here it comes.
Hi, everyone. This is Rich Chambers coming to you with a Christmas memory. I can remember one Christmas. I guess I was about 4 years old. And it was Christmas Eve, and I was so excited, beyond belief how excited I was. I was so pumped up, so jacked up, I guess like any four-year-old is going to be on Christmas Eve, and I could not sleep, and it was bedtime. And my parents had me in my room, I had my PJs on, and they were trying to get me into bed, and I was literally jumping on the bed, because I was so jacked up. It was Christmas Eve, Santa was coming. Oh man, I don't know, my poor parents. So they were trying everything. And then suddenly my dad looks out the window. He pauses, and he says, Rich, look out at the sky. So I ran to the window. I looked out. Look at those red lights. He pointed to the red lights in the sky. It's Rudolph and his reindeer, he said. I said, Rudolph and his reindeer? But if I'm not asleep, Santa's not going to leave me any presents. And my dad and mom said, yep, so you better get to sleep. I panicked. I jumped into bed. I threw the covers over my head, and I was out in a matter of minutes. And my mom and dad were laughing. And of course, a few years later, they told me, we happened to look out and we saw a jumbo jet flying by with its red lights flashing. So we told you it was Rudolph and its reindeer. And you were asleep in a matter of seconds. But, come on. I knew who it really was. My dad and mom didn't fool me. They still don't fool me. I know it was Santa and his reindeer. The bell always rings for me. Merry Christmas, everybody.
That's a great story. What's cool is like his parents have spotted the red light in the sky and like, oh, we can use that. That's good. That's good. You know, as a kid, I do remember looking out of our living room window and thinking I could see Santa's sleigh going by. I really did think I could see it. Anyway, love the story. And so now I'm going to play a clip from one of the songs from Rich's album, Santa's Rocking Band. This song is called It's Christmas Time All Over the World. And this is another one that was written by Rich himself. So have a listen to this.
On my advent calendar, I feel the magic stirring in the air. It's the time of year we laugh and sing with friends and family afar. Oh, how I believe in the Christmas star. Love is all around, Santa's coming to town. Every year I hear the bell's sweet sound. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time. All over the world. All over the world. I never get too old to...
I really hope you enjoyed that. Again, if you want to check out Rich's album, I highly recommend it. All you've got to do is go onto his website, it's richchambers.com, and if you go to the sidebar on the left, you just click on Santa's Rocking Band, all the tracks will come up, you can have a listen to them, and, you know, if you enjoy it, then download it. We'll have another one from Rich next week. And now it's time for this.
This is what we call...
So the Muppet Christmas special we're going to be looking at this episode is an episode of Fraggle Rock called The Bells of Fraggle Rock.
Get your cares away, worries for another day, let the music play, down in Fraggle Rock.
Now, just a little bit of backstory about Fraggle Rock. Now, Fraggle Rock first debuted in 1983 and it was on HBO. Now, up until Fraggle Rock, HBO only showed films. And this was the first time that a TV show that was actually shown on HBO, which I thought was an interesting fact that I wasn't aware of. Now, Jim Henson created Fraggle Rock, and the original name was The Woozle Show. Now, this wasn't something he had a massive involvement on, and he sort of handed it over to other creators, and they made this show. So the episode I'm talking about was the first episode of the third season, and its first showing was in the UK on December the 22nd, 1984, and it followed 2 days later in the States on December the 24th. Now, up until this point, the seasons of Fraggle Rock had started in January, but this time they brought the episode forward so that it could be shown in time for Christmas, and then the rest of the show followed in January. So I'm going to run through the story for you fairly quickly. I don't want to sort of, I'm going to spoil it. So if you haven't seen it, you might want to stop the podcast and go and have a watch, because it is really delightful. And you can watch this episode on YouTube. So if you just type in The Bells of Fraggle Rock, it will come up and you can watch it. It starts off with Doc and Sprocket. If you're in the States, you'll know that the human character in it was Doc, like an inventor guy, and the way to get to Fraggle Rock was through like a hole in his workshop, and he had a dog called Sprocket. Around the world, this was changed though, and in the UK, Fraggle Rock was underneath a lighthouse, I believe in Scotland, and the chap that was called the captain, he was played by a character called Fulton Mackay, who was very famous in the UK for being in a show called Porridge. I couldn't actually find that version on YouTube, so I've only watched the American version with Doc and Sprocket. And it's quite cool because Doc is there with Sprocket and he's talking about Christmas, and he explains that it's the 21st of December, which is the winter solstice, and he tells us what solstice means. And I won't lie to you, up until this point, I didn't know what it meant. But solstice means to stand still, because it's like when time stands still and then the days start getting longer again. And Doc also explains that all around the world, for hundreds of years, different cultures have had different ways of celebrating the solstice. And he even mentions Saturnalia, which is how the ancient Romans celebrated the solstice. Then it goes down into Fraggle Rock and the doozers are working away, and there's loads of icicles everywhere, so it sort of shows that it's really cold down there. And it's a nice little bit if you're watching a Fraggle breaks off a bit of icicle and he's walking along licking it, which I thought was really cute. So the deal is Gobo's doing a little bit of a Charlie Brown where he's like, the solstice is coming, it's the festival of the bells, and Gobo is like, oh, I don't see the point in it, oh, it's all just rubbish. And Wembley comes up and he's like, come on, we gotta go, we gotta do our Weeber Beast practice. And to explain, the Weeber Beast is like this big costume they've got to wear, where they dress as the Weeba Beast, and it looks a bit like a sort of like the old Chinese dragons. You know, we've got loads of people underneath the long costume that sort of weaves around. And Wembley takes Gobo to do their Weeble practice, and they sing a bit of a song that they're going to do. And the idea is that Gobo, you can hear, he's just... I'll play a bit for you. So you can hear there that Gobo's not enjoying it at all. He's just not feeling it this year. And this is the point where Booba explains why it's getting colder and that the rock is slowing down. And then Wembley explains what the festival of the bells is and what is actually happening in Fraggle Rock. Do you know what? I'll let Wembley explain to you with a bit of Gobo what the festival's about.
At the heart of the rock, there lies a bell.
The bell must ring once every year when the rock slows down.
Yeah, that's when it gets really cold. If the bell didn't ring, the rock would freeze. The rock would freeze and stop forever. Maybe even longer, Gobo.
Yeah, that's the story.
Gobo, that is not just a story. That's the truth.
So the thing is, Gobo just sort of doesn't really believe in the festival because he doesn't believe in this big bell, and he's got this map, and he shows the map to Wembley, and Wembley's like, well, look, there, right in the centre, there's a cave that's shaped just like a bell, and he's like, oh, that must be where the bell is. Anyway, they all go through because the festival's about to start, and a chap called Cantus is coming through. Now, Cantus is a character that was in a number of episodes, not in a lot, he wasn't one of the main characters, and he was voiced by Jim Henson. I'll play a bit of him for you here now.
I am happy to be here with you today for the Festival of the Bells, the most wondrous of all Fraggle celebrations.
I've got to say, he sounds just like Rolf and a couple of other characters that Jim Henson's done, but particularly like Rolf the dog. They all start singing this wonderful song, and it really is a lovely song. I'll play it for you now, because I absolutely adore this song.
There's a rhythm, there's a rising, there's a dream of green that needs to wake up password, and a promise that the earth will never ever break. It's coming, feel it coming, in the hearts we share with rock and sky. So raise your voices.
And what's particularly nice about this is that Booba, one of the main characters, he's really singing along to it. And normally he's like quite a real downer character, you know, like a real pessimist. But in this, he's like, you look at him and he's just opening his mouth and singing along and bobbing his head. I like to see that in Booba. It's not often you see him getting excited. So then Cantus explains why they ring the bells. I'll let him explain it to you. Here you go.
The giant Weeba Beast guarded the bell in the days when the rock was small.
I know. And look, I've got proof.
Now that the rock has grown and layers of stone cover the great bell, we no longer travel to the heart, at least not on foot.
No.
Instead, we remember.
Who remember? I love that part.
All Fraggles the rock over ring their bells all together. All at the same time. Our bells wake the great bell. The great bell rings and the rock keeps moving for another year.
And so they're just about to start the festival and Gobo's like, no, hold on, stop. Don't start ringing the bells. I want to go and find the big bell and I want to bring it back to you all and we can ring it and then start the festival. And everyone sort of agrees, it seems. Then he goes off and all the other Fraggles are getting really, really cold and they're sort of complaining about how cold it is. And Cantus decides he's going to go after Gobo to try and find him. And then it sort of cuts to Gobo, who's sort of like trying to find his way through the Fraggle Rock, following his map. Then we go back to the Fraggles again and they're just getting colder and colder and they decide it's time to sort of get under the Weeba Beast costume. And it's like, oh, to explain why, here you go.
I think we should put on the Weeba Beast costume now.
For luck?
No, for warmth.
And this is the point when they're under the Weeba Beast costume trying to stay warm that Wembley reads out Uncle Travelling Matt's postcard. Now, I don't know if you remember Fraggle Rock much, but every episode, Uncle Travelling Matt, who was a Fraggle, had sort of gone out into the world of the humans and he was sort of trying to study them to see how they sort of lived their lives. And in this episode, he's watching some kids sort of celebrate Christmas, and he's sort of hiding underneath a Christmas tree in a present while the kids are hanging their stockings over the mantelpiece, and they've laid out some cookies and milk for Santa. It's not a big scene, it's just a little one, you know, but there it is. Then we cut back to the Fraggles, and Red has had enough, and she's like, I'm not going to wait for Gobo anymore. I want to start ringing my bell to get things moving again, to warm things up. So she goes to reach for a bell. And she freezes solid. Oh no. And at this point, we cut back to Gobo, and Cantus has found Gobo, and Gobo's like, oh, there's no bell. Cantus is like, listen. And he hears this chiming, and what it is a clanging of this big ring on a cave, and he's like, oh, and the cave's behind that wall, Gobo is, right? So he goes to open it, and he pulls on this big ring, and this big rock falls forward, and he goes into the cave, and there's nothing there. And he's like, I came to the center of the rock and there's no bell. I knew it. I knew it was all just, you know, lies. And Cantus takes him back to all his friends and they're all frozen solid. All the Fraggles in the rock are completely frozen solid and the rock is slowed right down. And Cantus explains to him that the cave they went to was the center of the rock, but it wasn't the heart of the rock. And where the Fraggles live, that is the heart of the rock. And they have to wake the bell, and the bell is the Fraggles, where they all live. And so Gobo picks up his bell and starts ringing it, and then Wembley sort of wakes up a little bit and starts to move, and Gobo gives him his bell and Wembley starts ringing his bell, and then all the other Fraggles start ringing their bells, and everyone wakes up again, and it's wonderful, and the bells start ringing and it all starts chiming in the background, and Cantus goes, listen, and you can hear like this chimes echoing around the heart of the rock. It really is quite a lovely scene, actually. And that's sort of the end. Now, I should have said that in between this, it sort of cuts back to Doc and Sprocket up in their workshop. And Doc talks about different ways that people celebrate Christmas around the world. He doesn't go into it a lot, actually. The main thing they talk about is having a piñata. And they hang up this piñata. And Sprocket is, like, blindfolded, trying to hit the piñata, like, swinging the stick around. And at the very end, he breaks it open and gets some biscuits out of it. And Doc gets some mittens. And that's how the episode ends. But instead of it playing the normal theme tune, which is like a scat version of the Fraggle Rock theme tune, like as the credits are rolling, they actually repeat the song from earlier, the one that I really liked. I'll play another bit for you. Here it comes. And this episode was a massive hit, hugely popular, and it was repeated every year before the new season started in January. So they'd show this episode, and then come January, the next season would start. And it was also shown throughout the years on different channels as well. I think there was a gap of a few years where it wasn't on, but I believe it's being shown occasionally on different channels, even up to the present day. So that's it. That's the episode. I really recommend going to watch it, actually. Although it's not proper Christmas, they do talk about Christmas like Doc and Sprocket do. But the Fraggles themselves, they're celebrating their own solstice festival. But I really recommend it. And one last thing I want to say is I loved Fraggle Rock as a kid. I was a massive fan of it. I particularly like the Doozers, actually. But something I've started saying recently, and I don't know when I started saying it or why I started saying it, but when, like, the kids are sort of doing something that's not too bad, it's like, you know, they're just sort of messing around, but my wife's like, you know, oh, stop it, girls. And I quite often go, oh, let the Fraggles play. Let the Fraggles play. That's a phrase I've just started using. It's like, you know, let the baby have his bottle. I'm like, oh, let the Fraggles play. Let the Fraggles play. Yeah, I just thought I'd add that. Don't know why I did. Nothing to do with Christmas. Anyway, that's this episode's Muppets Christmas special, The Bells of Fraggle Rock. Why not go out and give it a watch? Now it's time for this. This episode's recommendation is a podcast called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligoolie.
Well, hello there. My name is Dr. Caligoolie. Welcome to my cabinet. I guess you could say it is a Cabinet of Curiosities.
It's quite a new podcast, but it's presented by a friend of the show, Tony Dixon, and he sent me an email saying, oh, maybe you'd like to check out my podcast, and I have, and I really enjoyed it. The first episode is brilliant. It talks a lot about different aspects of Halloween, and the one bit I really enjoyed is where he was talking about breakfast cereals that was, I think it was called the Monster Bunch, and it was different breakfast cereals that you can only get in the States. I've never seen them over here. That are sort of Halloween based, you know, we've got I'm sure you've heard of Frankenberry and Count Chocula. Yeah, it's a brilliant podcast, and it's the perfect one to be listening to right about now if you're interested in Halloween, or even if you're not a massive fan of Halloween. It's ideal to be listening to, you know, in the weeks coming up to Halloween. I think generally it's going to be fortnightly or monthly episodes, but he will be releasing the odd bonus episode, particularly in October. So get yourself to The Cabinet of Dr. Caligula. I will put a link up on Facebook so you'll have no trouble finding it. Highly recommend it because I really enjoyed it, and I'll definitely be listening to all the episodes in the lead up to Halloween. So yeah, that is this episode's recommendation. Check it out. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I know I say that every episode, because every episode, I really hope you've enjoyed it. That's just how it is, you know? So yeah, if you want to get in touch, I'm going to say it this week. I haven't the last couple of times, but I'm saying it anyway. If you want to get in touch, drop me an email at totalchristmas@gmail.com, or if you want to check out the website, that is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'm going to be back again in 2 weeks' time, like I always am. That's just how it works. In the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry Christmas!
How could we do this? We forgot him.
We didn't forget him, we just miscounted.
What kind of mother am I?
If it makes you feel any better, I forgot my reading glasses.